The Big Picture, a Christian insight into the world of movies, television and pop culture with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley. A Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.
Box on! I'm Ben McKechin.
And I'm his little helper, Mark Hadley. Welcome to episode 42 of The Big Picture for the week beginning December 13, our second last one of the year. And coming up in today's show, it's our Boxing Day bonanza.
Bonanza!
Now with even more added bonanzas.
So many bonanzas. And there's also something for the youngsters with Pixar's The Good Dinosaur.
And something for the not-so-youngsters with Suffragette and my top five Boxing Day film fiascos.
We're talking about Boxing Day on this edition, Mark, because we figure loads of people have traditions on Boxing Day, such as, oh, I don't know, like going to the cricket or having a barbecue or just lying on the couch all day.
The beach.
Because you ate way, way, way too much. But there are other traditions on Boxing Day, Mark, which I believe your family is one of those that does the tradition of...
going to the pictures. Millions of Australians every year go to the pictures on Boxing Day.
I think they're calling
Day.
It the cinema now, Mark.
Yes.
Yes.
I refer to it personally.
The motion picture house.
I talk to the children about the flicks and they have no idea what we're talking about. We've got some of the big releases for Boxing Day coming up. We've also got a history of great Boxing Day releases and some things to look forward to.
But before that... That's right, Mark. News just in. News just in.
Thanks, Granddad.
I'm not sure if you're aware, Mark. I'm sure plenty of other people are, though. They might have heard that there's a movie called Star Wars The Force Awakens hit cinemas this week, December 17. That's it. That's the end of the announcement. No other facts or information need to be provided. Star Wars The Force Awakens is here this week.
Except to say that our final show of the year next week will be all Star Warsy. Other things to tune in for. Tuesday this week, 8 p.m. on the ABC, is the return of Kangaroo Dundee. Now, this was a series I was somewhat unaware of.
The return of?
I know, because it's the second series.
Yeah.
It's a six-part series following the work of Chris Brolger Barnes, a man dedicated to rescuing and raising...
Is that his middle name, Brolger?
Yeah, no, I believe it's his nickname.
Oh, I see,
okay.
Yes.
But he's dedicated to rescuing and raising orphan kangaroos. Tune in at 8 p.m. on Tuesday for Brolger and his Kangaroo Dundee antics.
From one Aussie animal to another on DVD and Blu-ray this week is Oddball. This has been one of the most successful years financially for Australian films at the Australian cinemas, like for a long time. This has been really successful. One of the hits of this year was Oddball, and it was one of the most surprising ones for me. I actually didn't like it that much, this little ochre sugary tale of a sheepdog saving penguins, but it seems that loads of people do. So if you somewhat enjoyed it or haven't yet seen it, Oddball on DVD and Blu-ray this week.
And also on Tuesday this week, actually, it's the season of the end of year special. Personally, one I will be marking time out for on ABC2 at 8:30 on Tuesday. Good Game, top games of the year. Now, I think Good Game is a brilliant game, not simply a brilliant TV show, not simply because of Goose and Barjo and Hex and their sort of reviews of programs, but the way in which they let people like me, like an adult, a mom, a dad, that sort of stuff, into the world of gaming so you can understand it for the sake of your kids. So they've got their best of the year, their awards, all the sort of things you want to know about 2015 and games coming up this Tuesday.
Some news of a big movie that's coming out in February next year, February 11 to be precise, Zoolander 2. Ben Stiller is back as famous male model Zoolander. Owen Wilson is in, and it's got some storyline about famous people being killed off, including Justin Bieber, apparently, and Zoolander and Hansel, his BFF, have to get back on and do that and save the world again, as they somewhat did in Zoolander. And an interesting side point is it's interesting to note that Zoolander, the original, wasn't that successful at the box office. It was like 55th in the world, even behind movies like The Animal and Rat Race that nobody remembers anymore. But it had such a cult following, it's eventually led to a sequel 15 years after it first came out.
I'm part of that cult. I think Zoolander.
And I love it
awesome.
Too, but I'm curious, and I've seen the trailers. I think it's looking all right. So I'm expecting bigger things from Zoolander 2 than I was when I heard about it.
Speaking of cults, well, Whovians, it's almost Christmas, which means only
Whovians.
One thing. The
Hi,
annual
Whovians.
Doctor Who Christmas special. Fans will Great. Already know that River Song will be returning
yep.
to the show for the holidays. You just leave the room while I do this.
Yeah, please talk
but
among
in
yourselves.
In what capacity? Many people have wanted to know who River Song actually is. Well, the BBC has announced the title of the show, The Husbands of River Song, will air on Christmas Day. There's no word yet on where in the timeline of their relationships this initial meeting between the River and the 12th Doctor will fall. Would you just wake up, please? You seem to have just fallen off your chair. But however, based on the wording of the synopsis, which I've been passing this week, this seems to be River's first run-in with her husband wearing this particular face. And when you're in love with a regenerating Time Lord, marriage gets kind of complicated.
Wow. Before I yawn myself to sleep and so I can move on quickly from Whovian news, let's get on to the first now showing segment of the show, Mark. Our first Boxing Day choice. They attacked the homes of politicians, assaulted police officers, and claimed responsibility for London bombings. They held illegal meetings that advocated violence and radicalized others to destroy public property. Now, if the word terrorist had been in common use at the time, it would certainly have been applied to the women activists who strove to gain their gender the vote. Now, there's a new film, Suffragette, that's highlighting their inspiring struggle, while at the same time raising questions about the part that violence plays in social change.
Women should not exercise judgment in political affairs.
If we allow women to vote, it will mean the loss of social structure.
Vote for women! Vote for women! Vote for women!
I'm back.
You work at the laundry?
Part-time from when I was 7, full-time from when I was 12.
We meet Mondays and Thursdays if you're interested.
You a suffragette, Mrs. Elliot?
I consider myself more of a soldier.
Carey Mulligan, you might remember her from Drive, Far From the Madding Crowd.
Great Gatsby.
Yep, leads an all-star cast as Maud Watts, an early 20th century factory worker and housewife who finds herself drawn into the struggle to see women enfranchised. Well, Meryl Streep is alongside of her. She plays Emmeline Pankhurst, whereas Maud's actually a sort of a composite character, someone who actually didn't really exist but like representative. Emmeline Pankhurst, played by Meryl Streep, it was actually a leading suffragette who encourages her audience and Maud to see themselves as social revolutionaries. The great line, we don't want to be lawbreakers, we want to be lawmakers.
Where is it set and what time period?
So we're set in London in the 1800s. And to be honest, this catchphrase, we don't want to be lawbreakers, we want to be lawmakers, is somewhat, subtle in comparison to their tactics, because Emmeline's catchphrase that follows is it's deeds, not words, that will get us the vote, and her tactics increasingly turn into sort of violent and drastic actions guaranteed to gain the attention of the press. Maud slowly ends up sacrificing everything she has to the cause, her public standing, her job, her husband, and finally her son. And modern audiences, though, will find no trouble whatsoever in identifying with the injustices done to her and the justice of her cause. But the approach she's adopting is just as clearly hardening the hearts of the people that she's opposed to, as opposed to sort of winning them over. As Christians, we know we're often going to look at films like this. We're called to change the world, but it falls to us to ask, is this the sort of path we want to follow?
It falls to me to ask you two questions. How eye-opening is Suffragette and the things that go on in it? And also, how did you feel as a guy watching this movie?
Look, to begin with, it is an incredibly eye-opening film. I did not realise how much women suffered to get the vote. I kind of figured it was just some sort of like evolutionary political process, and eventually we gave it to them.
Cups of tea and knitting and
stuff, sit-ins on the lawn or something like that. But no, women were beaten by the police, and if they weren't beaten by the police, they were arrested and then taken home to their husbands, and their husbands were encouraged to beat them. They lost social standing. They were often judged as unfit to be mothers. Their children were taken away from them. They could not get jobs. This is a travesty. And so Suffragette is a brilliant insight into how a group suffered within society to get something we now take for granted. But as a guy, I'm sitting there and going, wow, I really feel bad. it's well worth saying here that this is a film that men should watch so they can understand that the freedoms that we take for granted are ones we do take for granted. People actually
so the protests that the film documents, they were effective, but how effective do you think they were?
Well, that's the tricky thing about Suffragette. You see, I think Suffragette is a brilliant film. It's got some incredible acting. It's got a pace that keeps you interested in it. For a social conscience film, it's one that I think is very convicting. And yet, what the lesson sort of teaches us is that the violence that's involved tends to polarize. It doesn't actually change hearts. That's the tricky thing about a film like Suffragette. You can get behind the cause and somehow be swept up in the idea that what was done in the name of the cause was worthwhile. But the truth is that even though violence might compel change, as it did in getting women the vote, it doesn't necessarily change hearts. So by the end of the film, you've got people really basically feeling compelled to change and grudgingly change, but not really changing in the way that we would like to see people change. As Christians, we actually have a whole different approach. What we want to do is see people change their hearts. We don't just want people to be Christian any more than we want people to be hamburgers if they go to McDonald's. You know, we want people to love God. And in order to do that, they actually have to be compelled in a completely different way. Firstly, they have to be compelled by the Spirit. We can't do anything about that. But secondly, a much more revolutionary approach. We love our enemies and show them what it's like to live in the kingdom of God. And that is heart-changing.
As is fitting for a show completely about Boxing Day releases, Suffragette does come out on Boxing Day. It's rated M for mature themes and coarse language. And Suffragette stars, as we mentioned, Kerry Mulligan, as well as big names like Meryl Streep, Helena Bonham Carter, and In the Heart of the Sea stars Ben Whishaw and Brendan Gleeson. They're getting back for a little bit of a reunion, I take
it. Why not? Okay, well, coming up on the show, we've got some great things ahead. We mentioned that we actually have Boxing Day releases. We've also got Youth, a Michael Caine film we're worth looking at, and what the kids are watching, The Good Dinosaur.
Welcome back. We're almost at the point in the show where we're going to talk about the new Pixar release, The Good Dinosaur, that's going to be at cinemas on Boxing Day. To get us there, we've got a soundtrack choice for you all that doesn't really need much of an introduction because we know you're going to recognize it.
Got a friend in me. You've got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you've got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got trouble, and I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. We stick together, see it through, 'cause you've got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. Some other folks might be a little bit smarter than I am, big and stronger too, maybe, but none of them will ever love you the way I do. It's me and you, boy, and as the years go by, our friendship will never die. You're gonna see it's our destiny. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.
Guarantee, Mark, that every single person listening to The Big Picture right now had instantaneous flashbacks to Toy Story from 1995 because of Randy Newman's amazing song, You've Got a Friend in Me.
And number two and number three. And
right, and including the Italian and the Spanish versions that turned up in number three. It's an amazing song, a very simple song about unbreakable, enduring, and devoted friendship. And while there was ups and downs in that relationship, particularly between Woody and Andy, the boy character, and the toy sheriff, in the movie, as much as there were up and downs in that, and it got a little bit ironic by the third one, it's still this incredible encapsulation of an entire trilogy for this one song. And amazingly, that song did not win the Oscar or the Golden Globe that year. It got beaten by this song called Colors of the Wind from Pocahontas. Even Pocahontas herself doesn't remember Colors of the Wind. No one's singing Colors of the Wind, but You've Got a Friend in Me. How did that get overlooked? But it hasn't been overlooked by people who did cover versions like Michael Bublé, Beach Boys' Brian Wilson, Footloose, Kenny Loggins, and even Mary Poppins' offsider himself, Dick Van Dyke, have done cover versions of You've Got a Friend in Me. That's how good it is. Take that, Pocahontas.
This Boxing Day, there are a couple of movies for the kids and their entourage, of course. That's us, basically. And we're sitting there wondering what we're going to do as parents. Well, one of the things you're probably going to do is see The Big One, The Good Dinosaur. Not just because it's about ancient creatures. The Good Dinosaur is the latest all-ages adventure from Pixar. Now, Pixar is the must-see studio, the world's most popular animation studio.
Responsible for movies like, oh, Toy Story 1, 2, and 3, which featured a little song that we might have played moments ago.
Now, they didn't do Pocahontas, we just might add as we're going on. But Ben says there's a lot that's familiar about the new Pixar film, including a take-home message that demands a deeper investigation before we all take it home.
We need to get home.
I got a job for you. Keep on the dodge and sidle up the loblolly past them horn heads.
What?
That creature protected you.
What is his name?
I don't know.
I name him, I keep him. Killer.
Ah. Stinky.
Violet.
Smite.
Lunatic.
Spot. Spot. Come here, Spot, come here.
Well, ain't you just the cutest thing?
So about several million years ago, there was this little dinosaur called Arlo, and he's an Apatosaurus, something like that.
Apatosaurus.
Apatosaurus. Well, listen to me. I'm a dinosaur expert, and especially after The Good Dinosaur. So Arlo, he's got a couple of siblings and some nice parents. They live on a farm. There were farms back in the day that dinosaurs worked on. And he's going about his business. But he's a bit of a scaredy cat, is Arlo. And his dad keeps telling him to face his fear. And he's also got this mantra about life of making your mark. So Arlo's got this swirling around in his head about making his mark and got to man up a little bit. Some things happen where eventually, and like tends to go down in animated films, there's got to be a journey of some sort and a quest back home, as that clip just demonstrated. And so Arlo finds himself a long way away from home and has to get back, and is befriended somewhat by a human boy who's on all fours and acts a little bit like a loyal dog. So I think there's some kind of evolutionary comment going on in The Good Dinosaur at that point.
Isn't the premise of the film that the meteorite didn't hit the planet, and so I guess we didn't evolve, but the dinosaurs
The dinosaurs did. That's exactly right. It's a very subtle start to The Good Dinosaur along those lines. And then there's another thing that I was trying to tread carefully around to not give too much away, but something happens with Arlo's relationship with his father that, well, Mark, might remind you a little bit of a movie called The Lion King.
Yeah, okay. So just keep in mind that if you've got young kids, there is going to be a fair degree of death in this film.
Yeah, well, there you go. You just named it. I was trying
I was just trying to put a couple of things together.
I was just trying to tread around that.
Let the reader understand.
But as an adult watching this film, and as an adult who can remember, I'd say 20 years ago when The Lion King came out, there are a number of similarities in the storyline of The Good Dinosaur. One of the disappointing aspects of The Good Dinosaur was from an animation studio like Pixar that has been so renowned for the inventive ways that it tells the same old story. This one lacked those inventive waves for me. I was a guy who didn't really like Inside Out that much this year. But in contrast, Inside Out is an amazing piece of work that has such inventive, creative ideas in it. Yeah. The Good Dinosaur seemed to lack that. It felt a little bit lethargic. You know, it's very beautiful and pretty. But the obstacles and the life lessons that Arlo has to go through on this, even kids, and this is pitched at, I think, 5 or 6-year-old kids, the kind of kids that were seeing Blinky Bill earlier in the year. It's like really, really pitched at youngsters. Even they will recognize how familiar and predictable and somewhat repetitive of other stories The Good Dinosaur is, and how it can't really cover its tracks on that front.
You know, it does sound a bit color by numbers. So The Good Dinosaur is rated PG.
It is.
How scary is it for younger viewers?
Well, as you named the name of it, there is death in this. That's true. And that turns up in loads of Pixar and Disney films. And now Disney's under the big... Pixar is now back under the umbrella of Disney. It's almost like Disney forgot they made The Lion King, and then the Pixar came in with their script and they went, oh, that sounds great. Like, we've never seen that before. Let's do that. It is scary. And there's some blasts of violence in it where Arlo comes into quite a few kerfuffles with other creatures back in the ancient times, where dinosaurs were battling it out for survival. And there's even some weird choices, I thought, given how environmentally sensitive we are and how much people around the world seem to be in love with loving animals. I was quite amazed at some of the creatures that got their heads ripped off and some of the ways that dinosaurs ate other dinosaurs. They actually showed that.
They're doing the eating on screen.
They even showed that. So, yes, word of warning, there's PG for a reason, and it might creep the kids out a little bit.
There's usually at least one family message, though, in these family films, something to take away. What did you think The Good Dinosaur was trying to say?
I think it's fairly easy to pick up what it's trying to say because it said
watch what you eat.
Because it said, there was that. But the bigger one, which they hammer home often, is make your mark. Make your mark. And the father character of Arlo's dad is big on making your mark in life. And it's not really clear exactly what that is. So what I'd be advising parents and kids as they go into this movie and take that take-home message is think about what does that actually mean? In the movie, it's not very well articulated. So it seems to just be if you find something that you're good at, like clearing away the sticks or helping your parents like put the crops in, that's making your mark. But I don't quite get why that is, but also the pressure that comes on a child from saying make your mark. What if they don't?
Is Arlo kind of like feel driven by the
fact
that
there's a lot of pressure on him? But what I found more interesting, I think, was not just the beauty of the finding your family unit that surfaces late in The Good Dinosaur, really quite a powerful moment. There's a bit about overcoming your fear that comes up in The Good Dinosaur that rather than focusing on the pressure and making kids feel like they have to make their mark, I think helping kids overcoming fear is a great thing. It caused me to think about everything from like stuff like Jesus reaching his hand out to Peter in the boat, the disciple, when the storm is going on that we read about in Luke's gospel. And he says, don't be afraid, step out in the water with me. Those kind of moments, if you can help your children understand that with God, you do not need to be afraid. There's things you can be fearful of, but you don't need to be afraid. There'll be this strength and comfort provided to you and a determination and grit that comes your way. If you can think that through and help your kids understand that, that's much better than just these kind of bumper sticker messages that come out of The Good Dinosaur. So for me, it's a bit of a letdown on the Pixar front. It'll be big on Boxing Day. Plenty of people will see it. But in the scheme of all the Pixar movies, it's a long way down the list.
Okay, well, look, The Good Dinosaur opens at cinemas nationally on Boxing Day, as we said. It's rated PG for mild themes, which includes eating things and threatening scenes that may scare young children. That's their words, not ours. The vocals in this Pixar cartoon are provided by Jeffrey Wright, Frances McDormand, Mark Scribner, and oh so many, many more.
Yeah, plenty of other people. Speaking of plenty of other things and Boxing Day related, go to Insight's website, go to insights.uca.org.au and check out Russ Matthews' Boxing Day wrap-up. This month in December, as he sees all the previews of all the Boxing Day releases that are coming up, Russ is going to be filing his reviews all the time on Insights. And guess we'll be making a special guest appearance on the show next week, Mark.
Indeed, the Ruster himself.
The Russmeister himself, Russ Matthews, will be here.
Okay, well, look, still to come, now showing we're going to talk about Youth, another big Boxing Day release. Also, we're going to look at the history of Boxing Day films with Dave Brown, the editor-in-chief at Empire Magazine. Welcome back. On our Boxing Day show, we're swinging from adult movies, Suffragette, and I'm soon going to be reviewing Michael Caine's Youth, across to kids' movies, The Good Dinosaur. For press record this week, when we actually look for other people's wisdom, Ben and I thought we'd combine the two. So Ben asked a bunch of adults, when you were a kid, what was a movie you watched that really stood out for you?
The Lion King.
The Lion King. Why did The Lion King stand out to you?
I don't know. I just loved it. I saw it at the cinema 8 times.
Now, repeat that, 8 times?
8 times. I went.
How did
you
even have enough pocket money?
Well, I just went with family members and got them to pay. I worked through my immediates, so mum, dad, then I started going with uncles and aunts, and yeah, eventually I worked through the whole family, and everyone had seen it with me once.
Really loved Kelly's Heroes.
Kelly's Heroes, that war movie, I can't even really remember what happened in it, but when did you see it?
From a very young age, we used to watch family time was sit down on a Saturday night
and watch
the weekly movie.
Right, what stood out to you about it? It didn't traumatise you, I take it.
Not at all. No. It was a movie that taught you about the horrors of war, but also about people trying to survive it, move forward, work as teamwork together for a common good.
What's the movie that you remember? You can't remember that. Who was in it?
I can't remember that either.
Do you remember what happened in the movie?
No.
No? Was it a cartoon? Was it a...
No, it was a normal movie. I think it was Lassie.
Yeah, you think? So it was obviously a movie about a dog then.
Yeah.
Did you go to the cinema to see it?
Went to the cinema, yeah.
Well, so it sounds like the winner might be Lassie.
Yeah.
Once Were Warriors, a New Zealand film.
Really?
I was about 15 or 16,
wow.
I think.
That's a hard-hitting movie about domestic violence in New Zealand. How hard did it hit you?
It was very confrontational, highlighting people without God in their lives and with alcohol and drugs and sex, just living for the moment. Yeah, it had a profound impact on me. Like, I remember walking away and with my mate thinking, what the heck did we just see?
I really like the James Bond movies.
Okay, so like all of them?
Yeah.
Yeah. How old were you when you were watching James Bond?
Maybe 9 or 10.
Whoa, yeah? And what was it that stood out to you about James Bond? It's an unusual choice for a 9-year-old.
I just love one day he'd be on a beach in the Caribbean, and I was just, I thought that were they were fantastic beaches. And,
yes, yeah.
And then the next morning he'd be skiing down the slopes in Switzerland.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And then he was back in London being really nice to Moneypenny, and then off again.
But as a 9-year-old, did you get what he did?
He was saving the world.
He was saving the world. That's the most polite thing you can say about James Bond.
Oh, I'd have to be when I was about 10 or 11 and I saw Empire Strikes Back on the big screen.
Oh, yeah. At the cinema?
Yeah, at the cinema.
Right,
yeah,
on. Yeah. Have you got clear memories of particular scenes or characters?
Yeah, yeah, just the opening, just, you know, in a galaxy far, far away, just the way the words started scrolling down, I was just
That was
getting,
enough.
That was big. I was getting engrossed in the story right from the beginning.
Who cares about the rest of the story?
But so many great things happened in that film. I still think it's, like, by far the best sci-fi type thing I've ever seen. I love it.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, not the Johnny Depp.
No, the Gene Wilder one, yes. No. Not to place your age that specifically. What was it that stood out to you about it?
I was fascinated by the whole thing, but also it was the first time I went to movies by myself with a friend. I was 9. It was
you were 9?
It was in...
your parents were very generous letting you guys go out for the day?
It was in Barrel.
Right.
And so we went to this little cinema.
The safest place in the world.
And we sat in the front row in the middle two seats where your parents never let you sit. I loved it.
Karate.
Good choice. I wish I'd thought of that.
That's a great... What's your answer?
But Herbie.
Herbie
Goes Bananas is one of them that stands out.
If only there'd been Herbie and Karate Kid in the same movie.
Hey, that's a great idea.
Arguably the best movie ever. The strongest memory of Daniel-san.
Yeah, Daniel-san. My name's Daniel.
Daniel-san.
And you've been waxing on and off ever since.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Motto for life, really.
And what about Herbie?
The way they were able to make an inanimate object who couldn't show expression or talk give it so much personality.
True.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Herbie should have won an Oscar, really.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't know how he would have held it up.
Filmed by Shirley Temple.
Do you remember what the movie was?
I can't quite remember, no, but she
sang... Did you see Shirley Temple at the cinema?
Yes.
You did,
yeah.
And what did she sing?
On a Good Ship Lollipop.
Of course she did. That's like the most famous Shirley Temple song ever.
I know.
And you remember seeing that on screen?
I do. She was so happy.
Yeah.
She had a mop of curly hair. She danced, and so she was only about 5. And it really impressed me. She's a lovely little girl.
Wow. I mean, seriously, the things that you learn, the people, the insights, that's amazing that she remembers that.
I know. We just went from a segment talking about Karate Kid and Herbie to watching Shirley Temple on the big screen.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a great trip out to ask people about what movies stuck out to them as a kid. And we're moving now from in this Boxing Day special from talking about movies that were targeted directly at the kids to more now at the adults. So it seemed like a nice bridge to talk to adults about kids movies. We're at another Now Showing choice this week, and Now Showing, well, what we'll be showing on Boxing Day is a movie called Youth. Now, admit it, Mark, you can admit this to me, that you've definitely heard it said youth is wasted on the young.
I have said it myself.
Mm-hmm.
Young whippersnappers.
The whippersnappers. Well, it's a new production that's coming out Boxing Day, and it suggests that it's wasted on the old as well. Scream royalty Michael Caine and Harvey Keitel play two elderly gents who've been blessed by stunning careers, but they're now wondering what life has left to offer them. Now, Youth's a film that challenges us to think whether there is anything good that can come from temporary blessings.
Daddy, you will not be bored because I have arranged the full service for you. You're going to have a massage, a sauna, checkups with the doctor every single day to help you get back in shape.
At my age, getting in shape is merely a waste of time.
Oh, God, you guys have got a strange friendship.
Well, it's just a good friendship. And in a good friendship, you only tell each other the good things.
Michael Caine plays Fred Ballinger, right? Okay, he's this retired orchestra conductor who's on a holiday with his daughter Lena, played by Rachel Weisz, and his film director and best friend Mick Boyle, played by Harvey Keitel.
Okay, I'm interested thus far.
They're in the Swiss Alps at a very exclusive, indulgent, artistic location.
La-di-da.
Yeah, honestly boring. I mean, it's like a resort that you wouldn't send your worst enemy to. Hitler would deserve this resort. You know,
Whoa.
That's the sort of, I know, it's
okay.
just, It's this lie on.
So what
white
happens
lounges.
At this Hitler hotel?
Okay, anyway, an invitation arrives from Queen Elizabeth II to
as it
Fred,
does.
As it what? Does, to perform for Prince Philip's birthday.
Sure.
You know, basically because Fred's this retired conductor. Would he please come out and conduct this piece? Which he promptly turns down the invitation. And as we discover the reasons why, we find out that his perfect life was not as perfect after all. He neglected his children. He cheated on his wife. He was a tyrant to work with. He was selfish. He was nasty. We also discover it's not only him that's caught up in life's dissatisfaction. Mick's last five films have been awful. The actors and models that are wandering around this hotel, apart from being far from being interesting, are just jaded and annoyed. Even the young Lena, you know, the one sort of bright spark, Rachel Weisz's character, her marriage is on the rocks because she's boring in bed.
Okay. What is with the title of this movie?
Youth.
Yeah.
He's basically pointing out that youth is wasted on everyone.
Okay.
And in fact, this film is so pessimistic.
So, not just on the young, not just on the old, everybody.
It is a dirge to the pointlessness of life. These two guys seem to have taken completely different approaches in life. So, basically, you've got Fred and Mick, who are basically taking completely different approaches. But the movie takes the same approach to their life, that anything they've done is ultimately valueless.
Whoa.
And when they come to the end of their life, I'm going to spoil it for you here. So, if you don't want to hear about a film I'm recommending you don't see, let me just tell you now. The film ends when they finally come to a weighing up what is worth having in life and concluded with nothing. One of them, here's the mystery, one of them kills themselves. And then the other just goes, good choice. You know, there you go.
Wow, that's so bleak on Boxing Day.
I know.
Finished eating a Christmas pudding? Let's go check out Youth.
I feel for the people who will watch this film because they will not only get depressed, they will pay for it. They will actually say, here, have $18, now make me feel miserable. The Bible says that there are a bunch of things in life that don't really actually deliver great meanings. And the Bible's not honest about that. Ecclesiastes is a book about that. But it's not to say that they have no value whatsoever.
Yeah, or that there are no valuable things in life or no good things.
This film completely undercuts all of God's goodness. It basically says that family is not what family should be, that friends are not what friends should be, that career is nothing. Now look, these things are good things. Let's be clear about that. But yeah, okay, the film gets hung up on the idea, which the Bible acknowledges, that they're not going to take you to the ultimate destination of the human being. They're not, they're good things, they're not God things. They can't actually give you a meaning. But Youth just gets so hung up on the idea that they ultimately don't satisfy that it concludes, quite erroneously, that there is nothing satisfactory in life to be found.
And you found that just a completely unsatisfying
ridiculous
film.
Ridiculous when you think about it. C.S. Lewis puts it this way. He says that if I can't find in this world things to satisfy a very natural urge I have inside of me, then I must look outside of this world for that natural urge to be satisfied. And look, I would just wanted to scream at the screen at the end of this and just go, look, it's obvious you need meaning and you failed to find it. Go ask God.
On that note, Youth is, as we've said, coming up. Boxing dates, rated M. There's some nudity, coarse language, violence, mature themes in it. It does star Michael Caine,
sure.
Harvey Keitel, Rachel Weisz, Jane Fonda and Paul Dano. And Mark does not recommend it at all.
Not a bit. Well, coming up in the show, we've actually got all sorts of things still. I'd like you actually to hang on, particularly to listen to Dave Brown, who'll be telling us from Empire Magazine's standpoint, what are some of the best things to ever come out on Boxing Day. And then I'm going to have a rant afterwards, which should be fun to listen
awesome.
To.
Awesome. Welcome back to The Big Picture. Now,
in our enthusiasm to bring you all you need to know about the latest movie and TV releases, Ben and I can sometimes fail to get a few important background details.
That can occasionally happen, Mark.
Once or twice, because we're too interested in what we have to say. But during this Boxing Day show, you might have been wondering, what's with Boxing Day as an event day at the cinemas? I mean, when did that happen? What kind of movies come out? Well, these are all great questions. So,
fantastic questions.
For a special edition of our regular Vault segment, Ben asked our mate Dave Brown, senior editor at Empire Magazine, to briefly summarise the entire history of Boxing Day at Australian cinemas.
So Dave, firstly, where did all this begin? When did Boxing Day become a thing for people going to the cinema?
Well, I think it really started with a Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Oh, that, like, old chestnut.
Yeah,
those little movies, you might have heard of them.
And basically, you know, in consecutive years, was it consecutive years or every
yes,
couple
it was.
Of years?
It was every
consecutive years.
Consecutive years, yep.
These films came out, and the first one came out on Boxing Day, it was just a huge, huge smash. So they decided, yep, we're going to continue. And that kind of got, I think, got film companies thinking, hey, you know, after Christmas Day, you know, half time people are just chilling at home, but maybe they want something to do. And so they started bringing out, you know, blockbusters suddenly. Boxing Day became the summer date.
That became an event. And, yeah. And so again, just to make this abundantly clear, I'm right in saying that before then, it just wasn't really happening, right? Boxing Day, it wasn't really a thing.
No, it wasn't. I mean, in the States, it's always been Christmas Day has been their big day.
Yes.
But over here, I think it was never an occurrence. But now it's kind of turned into a pilgrimage. You hear about some people going and watching numerous films on that day. And I think some cinemas kind of have special events when they have like 5 or 6 films, you can go for a marathon. So it is a very big thing now, and I think it's part of a lot of people's holiday tradition.
And do you think it's been big pretty much for the last 15 years? As in, for the last 15 years, every Boxing Day, we tend to get big, big films being released?
Look, obviously, every so often, there's a year where not-so-big films come out. I mean, recently we had the Hobbit films, which came out on Boxing Day, and that was great.
It's like Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit just own Boxing Day for the rest of time.
But yeah, but like this year's a bit different. I mean, we've still got The Good Dinosaur and David O. Russell's Joy, which are going to be great films. But I think because Star Wars is coming out a couple of weeks before, I think it's one of those weird years in that I think everyone's running scared from Star Wars. And they know.
Okay. So people have just cleared the decks at cinemas, and like movie companies are frightened of the impact that Star Wars is going to have.
Because it's only got opening like 7 days before. So I reckon Boxing Day, the biggest film will be Star Wars. Even though we've got a new Pixar, we've got, you know, Alvin and the Chipmunks, we've got Suffragette.
Which I know you've been waiting for.
You know, Will Ferrell in Daddy's Home. There's some movies, because like there was one year when Meet the Fockers, you know, a kind of a crass comedy.
Yeah, the sequel to the Meet the Parents.
Yes, and that came out the same year as Incredibles. And everyone thought the Incredibles would be a shoe-in. Fockers won.
Won the day. So are you predicting there's a possibility of a surprise that maybe Star Wars won't get up this Boxing Day and, you know,
Daddy's Home will win.
Or Alvin and the Chipmunks 14 or whatever we're up to at the moment?
I think it's unlikely.
Dave, do you ever envision a time where Boxing Day is not an event day at cinemas?
Look, I think film companies love kind of the big event and pinning their movies on something. So I think it's here to stay now.
Thank you, Dave Brown, for helping us out with that potted history of what's been going on with Boxing Day these last couple of years. What's coming out on Boxing Day this year? Your choices are, Mark, here you go. Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Road Chip. See what they did there?
Yeah.
Daddy's clever. Home, the Mark Wahlberg, Will Ferrell movie that Dave just mentioned. Joy, with Jennifer Lawrence, from David O. Russell, Bradley Cooper, Robert De Niro are in that. Suffragette, as we've mentioned, The Good Dinosaur, and your little friend, Youth.
Don't. Also, look, if you're interested in film in general and you're thinking to yourself, you know, it's great to hear about Boxing Day, but I'm actually a little worrying about what I've already missed this year. There's a great article in the December-January edition of Eternity by Ben about the best films of 2015. Look, highly recommend this. Go and check through what you might not have had a chance to see yet. I know as parents, getting off to the cinemas is difficult. This is your DVD viewing list for the summer. So go see Ben's article, Eternity, in the December-January edition. Well, we've come to this week's top five, and Dave Brown's potted history of Boxing Day blockbusters got me thinking about my own Boxing Day experiences. Boxing Day is Australia's biggest movie day of the year. I mean, forget the beach, all that cricket rubbish. Last year, we spent $22 million on tickets on Boxing Day.
Hot dog.
I know, and that was a 213% increase on the year before.
Is that all?
What I've come to experience as I realise, I look back on my Boxing Day history, is that most of the drama actually takes place off the screen when you're going to a box office film. So I give you my top five Boxing Day film fiascos, beginning with my fifth one. Thank you. Wreck-It Ralph 2012. Now, this is not a bad film. This is a great film. A video game villain wants to be a hero and sets out to fulfill his dream. Great, fantastic. I had to take my family to see this. I love this film. So I went, okay, kids, we're all off to see Wreck-It Ralph.
Woo,
and we got in there. They were thrilled how we lined up. We actually bought stuff online, but anyway, don't worry. We went in, we sat down, and the film was just about to begin. And I went, oh, no. This is a 3D film and we have no glasses. So I said, kids, wait,
and I ran out.
What, get the film to stop, like stop, run in front of the screen, stop.
I ran out, I ran to the box office and I said, quick, lady, give me 5 sets of glasses. Ran back in and I'm shoving these on our children's heads just as it's starting. And we watched, oh, I think, 45 minutes of that film before I realized we were in a 2D screening. Let's go on. The Trip in 2010 was not a Boxing Day release, but it's one of those events that happens in Boxing Day. You know, you're sitting around with a family and you think to yourself, what are we going to watch? I'm so tired and we don't want to go out. Let's watch something on the TV. And then you've got maybe 20 family members and they're all trying to work out what we're actually going to watch on the TV together. And my wife and I saw that The Trip, which is a Steve Coogan, Rob Brydon film about Steve Coogan setting off to England's finest restaurants and reviewing it together and Rob Brydon ribbing
two English
the
comedians
way.
Basically playing themselves or versions of themselves in this great movie about them trawling restaurants through the UK and making fun of each other.
My wife and I were so thrilled that this was on TV.
So you'd seen it previously?
We'd seen it, that we literally convinced everybody to sit down and watch
this
together.
I know those scenarios where you like bang on about how good something is and...
We were so excited by the Lord Byron impressions. What a hoot! and the little snarky jokes that were made about entrees that we forgot that I come from basically a working class family. Okay, so this went over like a lead brick. We had a great time, but suddenly we got to enjoy the entire lounge room to ourselves. Happy Boxing Day. Three. But nothing like when I took my family to see Les Miserables. I convinced my brothers and sisters to go off with me. Let's all go see Les Miserables. Hugh Jackman plays Jean Valjean in the musical based on Victor Hugo's famous novel of Sin and Grace during the French Revolution. And by sheer force of will, moved everybody into the cinema. And we sit down, and I've got my sister next to me, and, you know, the lights go down, the film starts, and Hugh Jackman sings. And 2 minutes into this two and a half hour film, my sister says, is he going to be doing that a lot?
How does your family continue to be talked into movies that you recommend to them on Boxing Day?
We are simple folk, and we believe people when they say you'll have a good time.
They must have stopped believing. Two.
Saving Private Ryan in 1998. Now, this is a close to Boxing Day release.
Yeah, it didn't actually come out on Boxing Day.
No, didn't come out on Boxing Day. It was very close, though. Steven Spielberg's epic World War II film starring Tom Hanks, Matt Damon, and, of course, Neil Patrick Harris.
Was he in that?
Neil, it's funny that you should say that. Okay, because you know the guy from How I Met Your Mother.
I'm a trusting person like your family who likes to believe what people say.
Most importantly, Doogie Howser. Okay.
Yes.
You know.
So
my wife and I, this is one of the very first films we see together. We're dating at this point.
Yes.
And I almost put the kibosh on our 16-year marriage right at that moment because we got out of the film and I said, wow, who would have thought that Doogie Howser would do such a good job in Saving Private Ryan?
In what role was Doogie Howser?
Well, I'm afraid because I'm contractually obliged to hold this position now and have done so for the last 16 years, I can't actually tell you what role he was in, but I'm insisting, and in fact did then go on to insist for the next 3 weeks that Doogie Howser was in that film. My wife now has just accepted that it is, even though we almost ended the relationship that night. One. But nothing.
What could be better than that?
Nothing compares to the fiasco of 2001. The release of The Fellowship of the Ring.
What could possibly go wrong, Mark?
Well, me and the rest of the world were just vibrating with excitement to get out and see this film. Anyone who'd read Tolkien was thinking this is going to be absolutely brilliant. Anyone had seen the little teaser trailers. So basically, we get into the cinema for the first installment of Peter Jackson's epic trilogy based on Tolkien's even more epic Lord of the Rings, and the theatre burns down. Now, it's just one of those...
For the record, I don't normally snigger when people's property burns down. No, but your stories are amusing.
I'm
amazed that you were at the cinema that burned down on Boxing Day watching Fellowship of the Ring.
It was the 2001 bushfires. Like, it was epic. If you know the plot of the film, basically it comes, the real epic moment is that they're just, Gandalf says to the Fellowship of the Ring, and now we must brave the Night of Moria. And the cinema went out. The lights went out. And I've never seen 500 people sit there going, you know, even as they're saying, oh, look, there's a fire approaching the cinema. And people are sitting there going, well, are you going to get it back on? Is it really serious? How serious is it? Because we're about to go into Moria. okay? And I was one of the last people to leave that cinema, still hoping. There's some lovely people, even as the smoke was filling the car park, who were actually handing tickets to us, going, please come back again. Well, if you're still here, why not?
I cannot do this alone.
You have my sword.
And you have my bow.
And my axe.
This task was appointed to you, and if you do not find a way, no one will.
The enemy has many spies, birds, beasts.
Something draws near. I can feel it.
Get off the road!
Hide! Always remember, Frodo, the ring is trying to get back to its master. It wants to be found.
Wow, and on that note of fiascos, here endeth the Boxing Day show of 2015 from the big picture. Thanks for joining us. Coming up next week on the show, Mark?
Yes, The Force Awakens.
Oh, a little film called The Force Awakens.
Just hang around for that, would you?
Russ Matthews is also joining the big picture team live in the studio.
Plus, New Year's movie resolutions and reviews of New Year's movies.
Now, I've been Ben McKechnie this week, but I won't be Ben McKechnie next week because I can't join us for what will be the final big picture show of the year. I'm going to be traveling overseas. This year has been fantastic, Mark. It's been a pleasure working with you. It's been great to talk about movies and TV from a Christian perspective. Looking forward to doing it next year. Enjoy your final show with Russ Matthews.
Yes, but don't worry, all the good stuff will be here.
Right. Yeah, all the insights and the jokes and the hilarious stuff will be here.
Please tune in. I've been Mark Hadley. I'll see you next week.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.